Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
What's up? Happy Friday. Welcome to the show. It's Shira, Ryan, and Shar here.
Woo, woo, woo!
In the studio. Yes.
I cannot wait for August to be over, I must say.
Really?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of my least favorite months.
I like August because I feel like it's August and the holidays are the two times that there's like an excuse, like everyone kind of shuts down and slows down a bit. Even though I'm very busy, but there's, you know,
well, it's
more
still kind of like the summer.
Yeah, more of an excuse to
transition
leave
to the fall.
And like it's okay to take time off.
Please, in LA, the summer doesn't end until Halloween. We got
which is why,
I
mean, it's so true.
Of 100 plus degree weather.
But you can't like be leaving town as much. And
people don't
off.
Really have meetings or anything
exactly.
During this time.
And people's like birthday, people who are born in August, I have a strong opposition to. Sorry to August Virgos and August Leos.
I don't like August Leos.
They are a handful.
August Leos are.
And August Virgos you can't trust.
Leo is something different though.
When do you, because your parents had you in the winter, because during winter months, right? If you are born in July.
I don't know when my mama and daddy had.
Well,
sex.
You know around because it's, you rewind.
I
how
never
many
thought about that.
What's is July that, minus 9 months?
Exactly.
I'm not a mathematician. I do radio. I didn't do, I'm not Bill Nye the Science Guy.
I'm looking it up.
Nevertheless, I do.
It is. Wait. Oh God. This is taking more time than I thought.
Okay. Anyway, well, I see that you have pose. What is that? Pose 3 or 4?
4.
Come on, pose 4. She has Beyonce merch on.
Yeah. I got my box before I went on vacation, but I wasn't able to wear my shirt, and I was like, "Oh, it's Friday. What can I wear?" And I looked
on
over,
a perfect day.
Yeah. Let me throw on Renaissance T-shirt. Which, by the way, Beyonce is coming to me like a gross sister from the Proud Family.
I spend
every.
So
Friday.
Much money.
The merch, and we gotta wait 11 weeks for it.
I spent so much money
How much
on
money?
Merch. Do you really wanna know?
Yeah.
Do you really wanna
I
know?
Only
you said
I spent about $300.
I did.
Yeah. Okay,
that's makes sense. I got multiple things, though, of course.
I
you
got
know?
Shirts, but did you see that she's releasing merch
more.
And it appears for like every song?
Yeah,
now?
And that's so annoying.
So she just, knows what she is doing.
She does. I love her. I'm going to buy
it. By the way,
it.
You were born sometime, or made, conceived sometime in October.
Ooh.
Oh. That's interesting.
Interesting, because like if you were born July 29th,
yes.
October 29th would be 9 months before, but you know it's not always like right on time. So it was like around then.
That's my friend's birthday, October 29th.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting?
I wonder if it was
you,
around
you
Halloween.
You were Halloween, yep.
You're
yeah.
Halloween.
Let me find out your mama was celebrating Halloween.
With the Jew.
In a Pentecostal way. In a Church of God in Christ
okay.
way.
Well,
oh, that's so funny.
It didn't happen on Halloween. It happened on Hallelujah night.
Hallelujah.
Oh, my God.
Now, if you know, you know. But go ahead, Shira.
Well, lots coming up. Speaking of moms, a parent's guide to helping LGBTQ youth and their coming out.
Yeah, speaking of moms.
3:35 p.m. Pacific, 6:35 p.m. Eastern. We're having that conversation. And in 30 minutes, the CDC's latest COVID update, making us wonder, is the pandemic officially over?
No.
That's
spoiler alert.
Hey, I'm trying to give dangle the carrot a bit here.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into some what's trending this hour. We got some breaking news coming from, well, the Wall Street Journal, but many news outlets. The FBI removed 11 sets of classified documents, including some marked as top secret, as well as information about the president of France, binders of photos, a handwritten note, and an executive grant of clemency for Roger Stone. This came from the Mar-a-Lago FBI raid of Donald Trump. And here is David Loffman, former chief of the DOJ Counterintelligence Section.
Among the statutes cited is 18 U.S.C. 18 is Title 18, which is the criminal code of the United States. Section 793, which comprises the Espionage Act and includes sections that I used to use to prosecute people who, retained unlawfully and disclosed unlawfully classified information, information defined as information relating to the national defense. It's the most sensitive kind of information at issue. And that was one of the violations that undergirds this warrant.
Well, we'll be talking more about that and the implications of all of this in 15 minutes. Moving on to other news, 8 corrections officers of color were barred from guarding Derek Chauvin in May 2020. Now they're receiving almost $1.5 million as a settlement for racial discrimination.
Yeah, like what?
You can't do that.
Yeah, Steve Lynn.
Because they don't bar 8 white officers from guarding black or brown people.
Oh, that is wild.
That's so weird.
Steve Lydon, then superintendent of the Ramsey County Adult Detention Center, issued an order on May 29th, 2020 that banned corrections officers of color from entering the fifth floor where Chauvin was being held. The order was rescinded.
Can you imagine getting that email?
Yeah. This is getting worse.
All I see is dollar signs.
Oh, I can't wait.
Get my attorney on this. Please. Go ahead, Sheriff.
Yeah, several officers after that filed charges of discrimination with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights the following month.
That is wild.
Got their money. All right, next up. If you were exposed to COVID-19, take 3 home tests instead of 2 to make sure you're not infected.
True, that's what I did.
According to new U.S. recommendations, the new guidance applies to people without symptoms who think they may have been exposed.
Because you can take, I literally took one that still had the line. I took another one, didn't have a line, and then I took another one that had the line.
So, yeah.
But
and
you know,
it was so wild. It was those ones that they sent from the government.
Uh-huh.
Trash.
Oh, wow, really? I just ordered more.
Wait, what do you mean trash?
They are not good.
I use those.
I swear that I had to go buy the Binex ones. And my mom and my grandmother, because they literally kept giving me like positives on every other like actual test that I would go spend, like the Binex ones, they kept coming out like negative.
I did the government one the past 2 days.
Girl, you need to leave.
What
kills me about this is that you are a single person who lives alone. What about families who can't afford to take 3-4 COVID tests per head in the household?
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
All right, that was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news?
Oh, my goodness. It was announced this morning that Anne Heche has passed away. Now, if you're like me, you were introduced to Anne Heche not through her acting, because she was an actress, but you were introduced to her through her being Ellen's girlfriend. This is late 90s.
What?
Oh,
yeah. You didn't know that?
So that's why Ellen was like said her condolences.
Yes. That is how I came to know who Anne Heche was, because they looked like sisters.
They were a long relationship.
I mean, she literally looks like the one she's with now.
Portia de Rossi.
Yeah.
So Ellen has a thing for
literally moms. Has a time.
Ellen did come out with a statement, but this isn't about her right now.
Wow.
Anne died this morning at the age of 53 following a horrific car crash last week. Now, according to toxicology reports, there was no alcohol found in Anne's system, but there were traces of cocaine and fentanyl. She had been in a coma since August 5th. And she had a severe brain injury. She was also badly burned. Her organs will be donated. And it's just sad because, to me, Anne's death is a reminder that people are going through things. It makes me think of that nurse in that killed 5 people in L.A., got into it with her boyfriend and drove through the intersection. And this is no excuse, but it's
still,
just a reminder of how heavy the world is right now. And so rest in peace, Anne Heche. It's sad. And I should mention, Lifetime is still moving forward. She filmed a film with Lifetime, and it's scheduled to premiere next month.
That's crazy.
And as of yesterday, they said it's still coming out. So rest in peace. And she also had children.
Yeah.
So.
A lot. That's sad.
And really quickly before we go to break, since it's up, Ellen DeGeneres tweeted, and she said, "This is a sad day. Yeah. I'm sending Anne's children, family, and friends all of my love."
Wow.
All right. Coming up next, the Wall Street Journal reported 11 sets of classified documents were obtained by the FBI in the raid of Trump's home. What we know so far, next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Newly unsealed search warrants related to the FBI's Monday raid at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida are revealing a lot. The former president is being investigated by the Department of Justice for potential violations of the Espionage Act, mishandling government documents, and obstruction of justice. And here is House Intelligence Ranking Member Representative Mike Turner downplaying Trump potentially having classified nuclear documents at his residence.
It depends on what the nuclear information is. You can say nuclear weapons, but there are things that are highly, highly classified. There's things that are not extremely classified, but are nonetheless classified. The other aspect with respect to access is we don't know what those documents are. I mean, I'm asking the same question you are. Attorney General Garland, Director Wray, if these things rise to the level of national security threats, to which there's an immediate need to enter the residence of a former president, you know, that should have a higher level of scrutiny, right?
All right. Back with us is national correspondent for Washington Post, Philip Bump. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
I mean, this is a pretty big deal, but it seems like there's a lot of people out there acting like, oh, well, let's like, we don't need to make it into such a big deal, as we heard. What are the implications of this coming out?
It's a good question, right? You know, I mean, I hate to sort of hem and haw here, but what we have is we have a document from the federal government saying we are trying to investigate whether Donald Trump committed these crimes, you know, articulating the three statutes that they may have been violated in an effort to be able to collect this evidence to make the case to a judge to sign off on a search warrant. We don't know that they're going to ever be able to prove to feel as though they can prove that Donald Trump violated those laws. You know, so they may never actually bring charges against it. And I think it's important to note that one of the statutes that's identified is part of the Espionage Act. But the allegation that's in the code isn't that he like was spying, that he was trying to sell secrets to people. It was that he had documents that could have been sold to people. And so it's really hard to sort of read the tea leaves here. And it's really easy to sort of go way too far down the line and draw assumptions.
Yeah, because, I mean, you brought up the Espionage Act, and right. I guess for folks who don't know what that is, what is that? And then why is it being thrown around, and is it too early to throw that stuff around?
Yeah, I mean, the Espionage Act is pretty much exactly what it says. It is the primary law under which people who commit acts of espionage against the United States are indicted or tried, right? So, you know, if I find out how to build a nuclear submarine and I call Kim Jong-un and, you know, sell him that for $25 and, you know, I'm committing espionage and I can go to jail. But as with any law, there are a lot of different pieces to it. There are a lot of different components that are barred by law that build into it, right? And so one of the components of the Espionage Act is you're not allowed to take documents and keep them at your house, in essence. And that's what Donald Trump is alleged to have done. And of course, in the context of the Espionage Act, it makes sense. I'm not allowed to take the nuclear subplant and keep it in my house so that I can then sell them to Kim Jong-un, right? There's no idea at this point that Donald Trump went and did that second step. It was just that he had that stuff at his house. And that's why it's useful to be cautious here, because I doubt, you know, who knows, anything can happen. But I really doubt that the Justice Department feels as though Donald Trump was trying to sell that stuff.
That's so interesting, because I know that Attorney General, you know, Merrick Garland is planning on prosecuting Trump to the fullest extent of the law, him and his cronies. But how is, will there be a challenge, do you think, as far as like proving? I know we've been talking a lot about intention, but like proving some of his intention around like the secrecy or even pleading the fifth like he did a few days ago. How can he go about proving that Trump had, you know, ill intent, I guess?
Well, so there are a couple of different things here, right? So there's the question of intent when we're talking about something like January 6th. So did Donald Trump understand that he hadn't lost the election, but still encourage people to come to Washington and, you know, who ultimately rioted, right? Their intent matters. Here it doesn't. He had those documents. Right. You know, there's, I mean, look, we'll add all the due allegedlies and so on and so forth. But the FBI went to Mar-a-Lago. They took documents full of top secret material that had some top secret material out of Mar-a-Lago. That's it. It doesn't matter. And yeah. Donald Trump's not going to be able to say, hey, how did that get there? Maybe Jared put it. You know, I mean, like, there's not a whole lot of space that
he
has here.
We know
we already know what his argument's going to be, which I'm happy to get into. But then you also have the pleading the fifth thing, which is a New York State-specific thing, has very specific ramifications in New York State. But here, it's pretty cut and dry if the FBI took out of there what it said it took out of there.
All right. Well, that was Washington Post reporter Philip Bump. Thank you so much again.
Ooh. Sure.
Okay, so the CDC has confused everyone once again because it's relaxed its COVID-19 requirements. Why? Up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
The CDC released new guidelines loosening COVID-19 restrictions. Now the question is, was that the right decision? And is it further contributing to confusion? Joining us is Dr. Amos Adolja, infectious disease doctor at Johns Hopkins. Thanks so much for being here.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Okay, so talk to us about what are they loosening up? Because it seems like the CDC changes the guidelines often.
Well, what's different about this guidance is mostly related to who has to quarantine after exposure. In the past, it had been that if you were exposed, you were advised to stay at home for a period of time. That's now not the case, that a person who is exposed can continue to be around people and go about their lives so long as they're wearing a mask and then test on day five. That's the biggest change. And I think this was expected. And the reason the guidance changed is because the virus is becoming increasingly more manageable as we have vaccines and boosters and immunity in the population, and monoclonal antibodies and rapid tests and antivirals. You can't use the same guidance from an era when those things didn't exist any longer. And I think this was a good change, and I welcome it.
That's right. A good point.
I guess this will be fine. This will work for us, not against us. I mean, are we really out of this like really heated emergency moment at this point?
In my opinion, yes. I think when you don't see hospitals worried about capacity any longer, I think that the emergency situation is a different flavor than what it was in the past. Mm-hmm. We're always going to have ups and downs with COVID. There's always going to be a baseline number of cases, hospitalizations, and even deaths. But it's more easier to think about it now like other respiratory viruses. We couldn't do that earlier, think about it like flu. But now I think we're at the point where we're starting to think about it in the same manner. And that's what this guidance reflects, that we're becoming much more acclimatized to it, and we've got all these tools that we didn't have, and we've got so much immunity in the population, and we're not worried about hospitals any longer. So all of that changes how we should think about this.
Yeah, it's so wild to me, even with respect to the fantastic points that you just made about like vaccines and how the conversation has shifted. I'm someone who's still personally dealing with a lot of traumas and triggers from lockdown in 2020, where, you know, you couldn't go outside without fearing death. And now it's like, oh, you got COVID, you can still come into work. I'm interested in knowing how this might fluctuate as, you know, we have different variants, you know, come out. I just was looking on my social media and a year ago, people were making jokes saying my summer plans versus the Delta variant, because that was the threat. And then we know we had Omicron. So what is this going to look like as new variants potentially pose bigger and new threats?
I think it will still be very similar, because no matter what the variant is, it's going to have a very hard time causing severe disease at the rate that COVID once could, because any new variant is dealing with the population, has a lot of immunity against severe disease, and has a lot of tools at the ready to be able to prevent severe disease, things like Paxlovid and monoclonal antibodies. So the variants are still going to have difficulty causing severe disease. Cases may go up and down, and there may be recommendations about masks in certain areas based on that, but I think when it comes to who has to quarantine and what has to, and how we think about this, I don't think that necessarily will change, because this same conversation could be happening 50 years in the future, because there will still be COVID, there will still be new variants. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to remember that this is not a virus that can be eradicated or eliminated. As long as there are humans on this planet, there will be COVID on this planet and new variants emerging. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because I recently had it for the first time, and it really did kind of knock me, you know, down. It was something that was really difficult, and I was shocked by it because I'm triple vaxxed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just felt like, okay, am I going to have to continue to get boosted or vaxxed as we're going, as, you know, the variants do change? Is that something that we can think about moving towards in the future?
I think that we still don't quite know what the optimal vaccine policy will be in terms of boosters. There are plans to update the vaccine for the fall to make it more directed against BA4 and BA5. But when it comes to boosters, the real benefit is in prevention of severe disease, that our vaccines don't necessarily protect you against infection. And maybe that's a larger discussion about improving our vaccines to make them universal, so they don't need to be updated, so that they have more broader protection against infection, or maybe vaccines that are given through the nasal route that provide more protection against infection, because the vaccines we currently have are excellent, but their primary purpose is to prevent severe disease. So they're not so good in the age of Omicron at preventing infection.
Have you heard about this report or news coming out that if you've gotten COVID over 2 times and you're a young person, you're more likely to have like heart disease and stuff like that?
Well, I think there's a lot of misinterpretation about how this those repeat infections. In general, repeat infections tend to be milder. But if you're somebody that has high-risk conditions, the second infections, third infections can be additive. But in the for the most part, a second infection is not necessarily going to be as severe as the first. But that doesn't hold for everyone.
No, I meant like in terms of long-term, like implications on your body.
I was definitely about to ask that, like how will this conversation shift? Because we still don't know what long COVID.
Yeah, or even just like the impact on our bodies. Like if you get it more than once, are you hearing anything? Because you're obviously in the industry and you work in this. Like, are you hearing anything that we can be impacted by it? Like, is it okay if I get COVID three times or more?
All of us are going to get COVID multiple times during our lifespan, just like we get multiple other coronavirus infections. We just don't have any other way to, the vaccine isn't able to prevent infection. And most of those infections are not going to have, each successive infection is probably going to lower, it's less likely that you have complications with it, and less likely that you have long COVID from a second, the highest risk of long COVID comes after a first infection in an unvaccinated individual.
Yeah.
Anybody vaccinated, it's lower, and second and third infections are lower. That doesn't mean it's zero. But it's not, it becomes lower. But I don't think that there's an easy solution to all of that. And when it comes to long COVID, there's more questions than answers. I still don't think we have proper definitions or our proper understanding of what it actually is.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We totally have more questions, but unfortunately, we got to wrap this up. Dr. Amish Adalja, infectious disease doctor at Johns Hopkins. Thanks for being with us.
All right, next up on the show, popular pizza chain Domino's took their business to Italy back in 2015. what residents seem to think about this? And it's like, these are viral videos going out there. It's pretty funny. Next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, it seems like Domino's is closing its doors in Italy.
I'm surprised they were even in Italy. I didn't even know they were across the pond like
that.
So
here's the thing.
What a dumb business decision.
We need to expand to the one place that they have a lot of pizza.
What a dumb business decision.
Why not? Their pizza's different.
Yeah, crappy different.
I like Domino's.
Wait, no.
I love
it. I've never been to Italy.
You do not go to Italy to eat at Domino's.
That's what I'm saying.
You don't go to Italy to eat at Domino's.
Come on.
If I go to Italy, I want the authentic pizza.
Well, the funny thing is, I would go to Italy and get a slice of Domino's pizza or buy a pizza and compare it to others.
So, you know,
do a little taste
test. That's their business model for the comparison.
It might taste different as well because, you know, they say McDonald's in other countries.
It does. In Israel, the Israel McDonald's is it.
In Trinidad, they put like a everything seasoning on your fries. I saw on TikTok.
Oh.
I saw like black pepper flakes on the fries, and they had a chicken Big Mac. Sorry,
yes,
I was watching.
They do. No, even in Israel, they had a chicken Big Mac.
Wow.
It was spaghetti, buffalo wings. No, it was too big. It's like literally too. The funny thing is, you would expect the McDonald's there to be the McDonald's here because everything is so supersized.
Yeah.
I was shocked by the menu there because it was like three or four Big Mac patties and three big chicken Big Macs.
That's
like,
because
it
every
was huge.
Day, every nowadays, I feel like restaurants, and this isn't to get away from the topic, but restaurants love doing these giant concoctions for social media.
That's true.
So let's stack eight burgers on top of one so you can take the picture and tag it. But go ahead.
At any rate, next time you go to Italy, you'll be forced to eat the local pizza.
Yeah, they close down every chain in Italy, right?
Let me give a little recommendation or encourage you. If you leave America and you're going somewhere to go visit, try to like eat like more local. Don't try to find the Starbucks because you're used to it, or another like American.
I don't even do that
chain.
Here. I love
go
a local
out of your
shop.
Way to like find places that you don't know or you only experience there. That's the point of traveling.
But I will say, when it comes to pizza, there's something that's just like great about just a regular pepperoni pizza. I don't need a spinach. I don't need a brie.
They don't do that in Italy.
Like,
Italy's more basic. If anything, we're ruining it.
Right.
Oh.
We're the ones that do the
same with sushi. It's the same with sushi.
We do the same. We in America, we do like Char's pizza, the garbage can pizza, the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
We throw all it. Italy is simple. They put one topping, drizzle it with some olive oil. It's your American taste
oregano.
Buds talking about regular pizza.
Okay.
Totally agree. Agree with Shira. Experience the native foods and the native restaurants. Don't go to what you know.
There you go.
Experience the country.
So that's right. Domino's, that's why you failed. All right.
One of the reasons.
More of what's trending and why singer Michelle Branch was arrested. Coming up in the T Report.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, welcome back to the show. More music coming up right here on Channel Q. Again, it's Shira, Ryan, and Shar here taking over the Friday SRS. Show. Exactly. instead of SOS or SRS. We also got a flyaway giveaway.
That sounds like a Navy boat.
SOS is SRS.
Oh. You know what? Okay.
It is Channel Q.
So Channel Q wants to fly you and a friend to Orlando to see at his biggest North American tour to date. Enter to win at WeAreChannelQ.com for your chance to win round trip airfare for two, a two-night hotel stay, and $200 gift card. And of course, two VIP tickets to see the one and only Ben Platt in Orlando October 6th. Just head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and enter for your chance to win.
All right. Coming up on the show, we're talking about the biggest do's and don'ts as the parent of an LGBTQ child, and where do you sit on a controversial pop culture? You know, how do you separate the art from the artist? We're going to be getting into that.
Oh,
we're talking about
gracious.
Problematic phase. Oh,
yes.
Wow.
That's in 15
so many
minutes.
Have been acting up recently for me.
Why you think I picked the topic?
No, we got to talk about it.
Well, let's get into some what's trending this hour right now. Author Salman Rushdie was stabbed in the neck and abdomen while sitting on stage was about to give a speech. Yeah, this is crazy. It happened this morning. The assailant was detained after rushing towards the 75-year-old and knifing him. He's been taken into custody. A suspect has been identified as Hadi Matar, 24, of Fairview, New Jersey, who police believe had obtained a pass to attend the literary event.
And this guy is elderly and got these stab wounds. Is he expected to survive?
Yeah,
do we know?
He's recovering fine.
Here, stabbed in the neck.
Yeah, here's Governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. Nope. I think we're having some tech issues.
He was alive.
There
he has been transported, airlifted to safety, and it happened at a site that is a place that's very familiar to me. Rural community known as Chautauqua Institution, where the most preeminent speakers and thought leaders and politicians and justices and everyone come together to have the free expression of thought. So this is a place ideally suited for him to be able to speak, and that's what he was attempting to do just in the last hour before he was attacked. The moderator who was attacked as well, we're monitoring the situation. He's getting the care he needs at a local hospital.
Can't even moderate a panel.
Frightening, right? Like, imagine just being at a local community event. You know,
thinking about being in the sunset of my life in my 70s and being assaulted in that way. That has to be very jarring. Oh my goodness.
Although he does get, unfortunately, a lot of death threats because he has done a book relating to Islam. And so, like, it's not, unfortunately.
Is it anti-Islam? Or anti-Muslim?
I actually don't know his work that closely, but this was, like, according to articles about him. Well, moving on, hotter and drier weather conditions could reduce California's water supply by up to 10% by the year 2040. Yikes. Governor Gavin Newsom announced California's latest actions to increase water supply and adapt to more extreme weather patterns caused by climate change. The announcement follows $8 billion in state investments over the last 2 years to help store, recycle, desalt, and conserve the water it will need to keep up with the increasing pace of climate change. Generating enough water in the future for more than 8.4 million households by 2040. The actions that were outlined in a strategy document published by the administration, it calls for investing in new sources of water supply, accelerating projects, and modernizing how the state manages water through new tech. Really scary stuff. I mean, I'm worried that we're hearing about this now, just like we heard about where we'd be now, like a few years ago. And we're like, you know, water is scarce.
Yeah, things are really bad.
Yeah. Moving on, I guess this is connected. The Arctic is heating up nearly four times faster than the Earth as a whole, according to new research. Scientists previously estimated that the Arctic is heating up about twice as fast as the globe overall. And the new study finds that this is a significant underestimate of recent warming. In the last 43 years, the region has warmed 3.8 times faster than the planet as a whole.
And I was reading a fascinating study on Business Insider, I believe, about how that's going to introduce more like diseases and plagues to us.
Oh,
because these microbes can still exist and like they can be living organisms within the, and as things melt.
I saw, we covered that. Were you here at the show?
No. No, we covered that this week.
I'm losing track.
I read a report on that. So that's terrifying.
Yeah. That was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news?
Child, I gotta say, I really empathize with this singer. But you know, you should always keep your hands to yourself. Yep. Michelle Branch, who I have not heard that name in quite some time. She was arrested for domestic assault in the early hours of this morning after allegedly slapping her estranged husband, Patrick Carney, who of the Black Keys. Branch had accused Carney of cheating in a tweet that she has since deleted, and this is where my empathy comes in. Michelle Branch tweeted this morning, quote, "Just found out my husband cheated on me with his manager, Haley McDonald, a full stop management, while I was home with our six-month-old daughter." My God, today. I just, y'all see, I have a physical reaction to that.
I literally can't, but like... And my thing is the fact that he decided to do that and then like call the police on her for a slap.
Men, if they don't have anything, if cishet men don't have anything else, it's audacity.
It's disgusting.
It is audacity.
It's disgusting.
Now, the couple had been married for 3 years and they have two young children. Representatives for Branch and Carney did not respond to TMZ or people's request for further comment. And that is the T Report for this hour. I don't advocate for domestic abuse in any situation, but I'm going to rock a shirt that says Free Michelle.
No, she deserves it. She deserves to be
Patrick
free.
Patrick Carney is not even a good-looking guy.
Which, by the way, my middle
those
school...
Those are always the worst.
My middle school assistant principal had the surname of Carney, and he was not that good-looking
either. It might just be in the name. Because you're...
I like this song. Yeah.
This makes me think of Lindsay Lohan movies of the early 2000s.
All right. What's coming up in Char Says So?
Coming up in Char Says So, we're going to talk about dealing with a problematic fave. And I'm not talking about in proximity to you or a peer.
Woo!
I'm talking about if you love Harry Potter, but you have issue with J.K. Rowling on a moral compass level. That's just one example, but we're going to talk about that coming up.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
So it's teased before the break, you know.
I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to turn on the mics all the way.
Yeah, listen, I'm only here one day a week, people, soak it in. So in the name, like this week in particular, we've had a few hiccups within the pop culture zeitgeist. For example, Kathy Hilton on Sunday night calling Lizzo precious and not Precious Lee, which people hopped in my mentions and tried to say.
No, and that because it was based off of a USA Today article that tried to loop in Precious Lee.
They're trying to save her?
Yeah, they were trying to save her.
Precious Lee is a plus-sized model.
Who is stunning.
If I'm a journalist who does pop culture and I don't even know who Precious Lee is, you expect me to believe that Kathy Hilton knows who Precious Lee is?
If you want to remind
okay,
folks.
Play it.
Lady.
Yes.
I feel like I do, Precious.
No, that's not me.
I don't know her.
That is Lizzo.
She is Precious, though. Lizzo's Precious.
That's like what I call her.
Lizzo.
Oh, my gosh.
The laughing is so cringy to me. It's
well, yeah, instead
laughing.
Of... Yeah,
oh,
the,
it's
yeah.
so cringe.
And we should mention that the Precious that she was referring to is the character from the Lee Daniels film that starred Gabourey Sidibe and Monique. So she basically was comparing Lizzo and Gabourey, who look nothing alike, who also are in two totally different fields of entertainment. And it got under my skin because these women are minding their business.
Gabourey, which was the second time that happened to Lizzo on that show.
What do you mean?
A week before Eva Marcille, they were playing a game, and there was a photo that popped up of Lizzo, and she literally said, "She be eating."
Who is that?
Eva.
Oh, she said she be eating?
Yeah, like she be eating.
What?
Is that because Lizzo's screen name is Lizzo be eating?
Yeah, but it wasn't in that context.
Oh, yeah, really? I don't like this. And like I was saying, because
stop
these
using
women,
Lizzo for your games.
I know.
I
please.
Mean, stop using plus size black women for your games. Gabourey's at home with her husband and her three cats minding her business, and Lizzo was on the beach in a bikini minding hers. So I don't like things like this. But I wanted to have a conversation with you all, especially you, Shira. No, I'm joking. Because I know that you have problematic faves.
Yeah.
How do you delineate? How do you...
We all do.
We all do. I love Wendy Williams, and there's people that will call into this station and tell me a million and one reasons why I shouldn't.
Yeah.
And I know Wendy has had her stuff, and like I told you all before the break, you know, what if you're a Harry Potter fan, but J.K. Rowling does not align with your you know, moral compass? What about if you're a Michael Jackson fan? Those
Kanye
allegations.
West.
You know, there's a lot of different ways in which we pick and choose. And what's the line for you? So that's kind of what I want to talk about.
I mean, a lot of people hate Elon Musk, but they'll get a Tesla.
He's a Capricorn.
First of all, yeah, you're right. It's true. It's true. Because I do want one. I still want one.
Now you know you got to get rid of your AAA if you get a Tesla.
Really?
Oh, really?
Sunny said that Sunny Hostin on The View, Manny, her husband, who's a doctor, has a Tesla, and his car broke down.
Yeah,
and
this has happened. I've seen it before.
He had to wait
like
3 hours. Like, Tesla has their own version of AAA.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
It's not like popular and everywhere.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
What about the fact that Steve Jobs was pretty problematic, but everyone loves Apple?
In what ways was he problematic?
He was he just didn't treat workers ethically, or
like Jeff Bezos,
toxic work.
So any other rich CEO?
Okay, other billionaire.
I mean, for me, I think it's so interesting when we talk about this because it is difficult to split the line between the artist and the work, because it's like, well. I don't know. It's been something that's been always difficult for me, if I'm being quite honest. Like, if I always say, like, let's talk about Nicki Minaj, right? I will never publicly say, even though I'm doing it now, that I listen to her music, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in public, I saw her at Essence Festival, mm-hmm. and she was great, and I was, like, living.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I also know how she's attached to so many problematic things, from the connections to her husband to
the
things that she said and done. There's so much there that is really, it makes me uncomfortable, but there's so much history and memories tied to the work that I remember and makes me feel.
Yeah, but is there, like, I feel like there's obviously a spectrum of problematic. Is there like that line where, like, well, they've been problematic, but not enough where I can still listen.
That's essentially my question. I think for me, it's easy. Like, as someone, I was never a Nicki fan because I didn't like, I can appreciate, I won't take away from that sister's accomplishment.
You're a little Kim girl, though.
But I was raised on Kimberly Denise Jones from Bed-Stuy, New York, and I did not like the way that Nicki entered the game and what she had to say about Kim.
Yeah.
I also wasn't a fan of all the characters and stuff. Like, I felt that was for kids. Sophia Grace on Ellen doing boom, ba doom, boom, bass. Nicki, you know, like, that's not my type of hip hop.
But
know?
Like a Kathy Hilton who just literally stepped in it. I love Kathy. She's one of my favorites on Housewives of Beverly Hills.
You know, I talked to her on April 2nd.
Exactly. And so that was really difficult for me because I know the running joke is she don't know anything.
Yeah.
And so this was kind of like a moment where it showed multiple things. Like, I feel like two truths can really exist
here.
It was racist. It was most definitely that. And it also was just like, damn, Kathy, don't make me not like you anymore because I love you.
But the point I was trying to make is it was nothing for me to dispose of Nicki because I can appreciate her contributions. And when it comes to her music, I was always more of a fan of Nicki collaborations than her solo work.
Yeah.
I never really liked her solo work, but she knows she can lay down 16 bars on a feature.
Yeah. But let's go back to some of the big ones. Oh, we need to go.
Michael Jackson
and
R.
Kelly.
Harry Potter.
I feel like the ones that people talk about really are Harry Potter with J.K. Rowling, R. Kelly and Michael Jackson. And then I would say Chris Brown.
And don't forget Bill Cosby.
Chris Brown and Bill Cosby.
Because
too.
The Bill Cosby show, a different story.
Older blacks are struggling with Bill Cosby.
So, I mean, like, I think there are extremes where you're like, there's no room to, like, it's uncomfortable to watch them knowing they were doing those things during that time.
But see, not everybody feels that way. Some people can excuse sexual assault, but can't excuse racism.
I think for me, how I've handled it, like, I just kind of eliminate them from yeah. my like what I take in, I ended up fixing, so we have a little bit of extra time. I end up just, yeah, kind of not supporting them financially anymore. Like, it's not like I'm buying their music or I see a clip of it online, maybe I'll play it, but I'm not financially actually adding to their success.
Okay, well, let me throw this in there, because as a stan, everyone knows that I've been a stan of Destiny's Child since I was mm-hmm. fifth grade. They shaped a lot of the woman that I am today, actually. Mm-hmm. All three, not just Beyonce, all three of those women did. And it stung, you know, when Dave Chappelle was tackled at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And I got word that Jay-Z and Beyonce were there.
They're close friends.
The way that I reconcile that is that people were saying that he and Jay-Z are friends, and Beyonce was there with Jay-Z. That's the only way I can kind of skirt around this. But also, what do you do when your politics don't align with your friends? Because
Dave
Chappelle's
a recent one, too.
I do not believe that. But, I mean, not really, though, because he's just flat
years,
out
though.
Being...
Well, he's always kind of been problematic, but I think now we're very vocal about
what
it.
What I will say is I don't think that Renaissance is a cash grab for Beyonce.
I don't either. Yeah, Uncle John, that's
she
literally
did her
a connection.
Research. There's, you know. And so what do you do?
And she's done house music before.
What do we do? Because we all have friends in our lives that don't align with us politically, but morally for the most part. That's what links the friendship.
Yeah.
What happens as your star rises, and let's say theirs does as well, how do you maintain, let's say Beyonce and Chappelle are friends? But Beyonce's got Laverne Cox and Ivy Park being a spokesperson.
I think it could be bad.
Jay-Z had Janet Mock in the Family Feud video.
It's a very
trans
incestuous.
Everywhere.
Exactly. It's very.
I think this is what it proves. The silence of us trying to figure out how to answer this is it's complicated.
Exactly.
And it's nuanced, and it's like
just like every family.
Well, I wouldn't consider that man a part of my family, but that was a great start.
He ain't a part of my family.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Now, with LGBTQ plus youth being attacked politically, it wouldn't be shocked if parents everywhere were worried about how to handle if their kids come out. Well, there's a new groundbreaking coming out guide, and we have the creator and editor of it. So joining us to break this down, you know, the do's and don'ts, please welcome Donald Harkin, the creator and editor of the LGBTQIA guide for parents and guardians at Shout Out. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Harkin. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I mean, we're super happy. This is so important. Let's start off with why was it important for you to come up with this guide?
It was kind of based on my own experience of my own mother. My own mother, you know, I'm from Ireland. I live in Dublin, and Ireland, you know, was quite a conservative place for a long time. We've only kind of made a lot of change in the last few years. So I think a lot of people of an old generation kind of feel maybe a bit left out and unsure of, you know, all the new terminology and different parts of being LGBTQI+. So when I came out myself, my own mother was very worried about me. She didn't understand lots of things. And it was more the fear of the unknown, and obviously worked through all that. Now we have a better relationship than ever. But the experience kind of made me realize that, you know, so many parents and guardians are so fearful and don't know. And I thought, why not develop a guide which kind of has, you know, the A to Z of what to expect, you know, what certain terms are. And that's kind of where it came from. And then I volunteered with Shout Out. And they said, yeah, go ahead and put it together. And that's what I did.
Amazing. And how did you figure out, like, what to include? Did you involve other people in it?
Yeah, so I suppose, like, I spoke to lots of my friends through LGBTQI+, and I kind of said, you know, what kind of questions or queries your parents had. I spoke to my own parents as well. My own mother gave plenty of material. She was inspiration. So it was kind of like, you know, kind of different friends, family, a kind of different group, as many people I could. And it kind of just came from there. Like, you know, I'm sure we could have probably written an encyclopedia and all the things to have in it, but obviously we didn't have that many pages. But, you know, we kind of thought, let's try and cover the main topics, such as, you know, terminology, coming out, maybe bullying at school, different parts as well. So we kind of just thought these are some of the main points people mentioned, and that's what we included.
So it includes basically, it's a handbook, if you will, of general mm-hmm. terms. And then if it's a more nuanced situation, which it tends to be depending on how you come out, then your parents yeah. are able to ask and dig a little deeper.
Exactly. I think, you know, one of the difficult sections was, you know, we're like, you know, what to do if you think maybe your child is LGBTQI plus, because, you know, lots of parents are very open and accepting and they may kind of have an inkling, which could be wrong or right. But, you know, sometimes parents say, oh, I just asked them myself straight away. And, you know, we kind of looked at it and discussed with people. And we felt that, like, kind of putting that pressure on somebody can be a lot. So we kind of thought building an inclusive environment and fostering that kind of openness from an early age will kind of lead to a child being able to come out easier. So that was a hard section because I spoke to parents. He said, oh, I just want to ask them. I don't care if they are. And that's really admirable. But, you know, people have to come to it in their own terms, too. And sometimes being asked directly is difficult. So we try not, you know, tailor it as best we could to our own experiences as volunteers and being members of the community as well.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to think about the nuances of that as well. I guess top three things from this list that people should take away from that is kind of on your mind about this guide.
I suppose, first of all, you know, creating an inclusive home from an early age is really important. You know, so there's never a stage of where your child may think you're not accepting. So I think doing things such as having, you know, literature, films, TV that are obviously age-appropriate LGBT themed is really important. You know, having that from an early age, so maybe the book about two princes who fall in love, not just a prince and princess, and maybe you might have films, you know, which are for young kids which have LGBT characters. So having that kind of representation from a very early age will lead to either, you know, your children being very accepting if they're straight, and if they're not straight, then they'll know that you as a family support and love them. So I think that's very important. I think the second thing would be, you know, bullying at school is still kind of an issue in Ireland, and I'm sure in America too. And I think sometimes children are very scared and afraid to tell parents they're being bullied, especially if they've been targeted for being LGBT, if they haven't come out themselves or even accepted themselves. I know from my own experience, I was bullied very badly in school, and I never wanted to tell the teachers or my parents, because in my mind, if I told them what was being said to me, they would think I was gay, which obviously was right, but, you know, I had accepted it at that point myself. So being mindful as a parent to be watchful and to kind of have conversations with children around bullying, what it looks like, and making sure, you know, the child knows that you can come to them if anything that happens. Because, you know, bullying somebody can lead to really long, you know, long-term effects. And I know it stopped me coming out until I was 23, so I think that's very important. Mm-hmm. And then as well, I suppose it's about just being open to learn more about things, you know, like LGBTQI plus acronym. A lot of parents I know are kind of really confused by it and they don't understand it, or, you know, kind of understanding pronouns and different identities. So being more aware and knowledgeable, I'd say those are the three main takeaways I would say from the guide. Yeah,
really good. And just finally, what advice should we be giving to LGBTQ youth? Like, you know, I think that this is important for those who are elders in the community and also those who are just allies.
I think for youth, I think, you know, first of all, if you've come out and you're able to accept you are, that's fantastic. And don't be afraid to kind of have open conversations with your parents and guardians, you know, if they're kind of, they don't know about certain aspects of your life, they want to learn more, like, you know, helping them and helping teach them is really important as well. And also I think too, it's about, you know, if you're able to come out and be, you know, be who you are, kind of create an environment for other people in your community who see who you are, and not being afraid to, you know, create groups in schools or youth clubs. So if other people who are maybe struggling, unlike, you know, you are, that they may come to you then and say, you know, I think I'm LGBTQI plus too, it'd be nice to, you know, meet you and talk about it as well. So I think for the youth now, we have to kind of continue the fight and continue to represent and yeah. continue to be there for people of our own age and for all generations too, because, you know, representation and kind of having an image and a voice is so important, because progression can become regression very quickly. So we need to keep the voice and keep waving the flag.
All right. So thank you so much for joining us. Donald Harkin, a creator and editor of the LGBTQIA Guide for Parents and Guardians at Shout Out. We really appreciate it for having you.
All right, coming up next, the worst dating app yet is here. More on the right stuff next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Hey, well, let's
Why
get into
that?
It. Queer billionaire Peter Thiel.
Oh, you've said more than enough.
Who's a former board member of Facebook, is actually one of the app's biggest backers. So is this something that's good for the queer community, you would
no.
ask?
No.
He's pumped $1.5 million into an app called The Right Stuff. Can you guess what the app does?
Find
what kind
you
of
a
dating
queer...
app?
Oh, I remember.
Find you a sugar daddy.
Here it is. The app, which was started by the younger sister of the Trump White House Secretary, Kayleigh McEnany. So Ryan McEnany started it.
Oh.
She
you almost shocked me. I was like, now hold on, Ryan, who?
She posted a video about the app's arrival It's coming out next month. She says that you can only join by invitation. Mm-hmm. It's free to use.
I don't have it. Don't look at
me. But ladies can earn a premium membership by inviting other women to join. She also says that...
Wait, so is this gay or not?
No, it's not.
The homosexuals cannot sign up for this.
I was about to get to it. Those are the only two options, ladies and gentlemen. She also clarifies that even when building your profile, it won't ask you for your preferred pronouns.
Ooh.
Which, you know, there is literally a school, like a principal that just banned like pronouns. And I'm like, well, how are they going to address each other?
They don't.
Like, I, don't just saying I.
They don't get it. They think they're taking away for just like the LGBT.
English class is about to be really difficult.
Yeah. So you cannot. So basically, because I thought that you were introducing
this. It's for straight people.
Yeah. I thought that you were introducing this as a gay app.
No, it's like the opposite. It's the exact opposite.
Former press secretary for Donald Trump, Kayleigh
McEnany. So wait, why did you ask if it's good for the queer community?
Because it's obviously not. It's very straight and they're against everything else.
Oh, so
it's for conservative people.
Conservative queers.
Oh, plenty. We talk to a log cabin Republican on here every Tuesday and Thursday in 2019.
We do.
I know.
Shout out to Matthew Kraft.
Yeah, this sounds like it's very, it's aimed at a very specific audience.
Oh, God.
And, you know, I say good riddance. I don't trust anyone affiliated with Facebook. I'll tell you, and I got friends that work for Facebook. But after they pulled that stunt that they did with the abortion thing, I said, oh, no.
Here's the thing. There needs to be more
options.
And that's
just one of many.
Yeah, of course.
There is more options. FarmersOnly.com.
I was about to think. You took my joke.
Oh, I did.
ChristianMingle.com.
Take it away. Say it again.
So there needs to be more options. I mean, you can't just go on Farmers Only.
What about Christian Mingle? Black people meet.
All right. Well, there you go. The worst, officially the award for the worst dating app out there.
So wait, let me ask one more question. So this is specifically for like rich people. You have to be invited like a Raya.
Well, it's a Raya for conservatives. But it's not like, I don't
Raya
think it needs
is
to be rich.
Raya for conservatives. I'm on Raya.
I mean, yeah.
That is for
Raya,
conservatives.
Raya, I downloaded it for a while. If you don't know from Raya it is, Raya is like an upscale app that is meant for folks with blue check marks, celebrities, or just people.
Influencers.
Yeah, in the industries.
It is not. If you are
Mark,
of color,
yeah.
It's not really an app for you. Do
really?
You know, I don't really.
Did
when
you have
I was
anybody
single,
that hit you
I
up
watched.
On that?
I've had this, oh my God, I gotta show you him, this one guy, but he was just like, I don't wanna.
I connected with lots of black guys on Raya.
I'm sure you did, because I guess.
Are you excited? How did that make you feel?
I was turned on.
What year was this?
I connected with hot guys, but I didn't get together with any.
What year was this? Because there are no black men.
During COVID.
There are no black men on my Raya.
Really?
I'm like, is this an auto setting? Like, I don't see any black men. I really don't see any other men other than white men. There are no Indian men. There are no indigenous men. There are no Asian men, no Latino men. They're
so
all
here's
just
the thing.
White and live in Malibu.
This is what I think we should
this
do.
This conversation's so
cute. This is what I think we should do. Ryan is always the one who goes and investigates.
God. I am,
Ryan,
yeah.
What app did you download?
Ryan and I.
I've downloaded the Truth app.
So
I've
Ryan has downloaded. So I think we have a new. We have something new for you to do.
I gotta find the straightest
Excuse
picture
me.
Of me, though. The straightest
you need to download
photo.
This app.
Excuse
and,
me.
Yeah.
Ryan cannot do an investigation on my behalf because Ryan is a Big Mac, I'm Chicken Nugget.
So you're going to do it.
And you're a McFlurry.
So
we're going to have three different results. We have three different items on the menu. So we're going to have three different results.
The whole point is for him, as he's an assignment, he needs to go check this app
how
for
is
us.
If Ryan gets success on the app, how does that then affect Shar Jocel?
I don't need to be impacted. I just am interested to know what's happening.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Yes, we're back. And hope you're enjoying that great music here on Channel Q.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Friday, and we've got a flyaway giveaway.
Yes, we do.
Channel Q is flying you off to see Ben Platt.
I can't imagine my life without you.
It's his biggest North American tour to date with special guests Ali and AJ.
Whoa, whoa.
We'll fly you to Orlando, put you up in a fabulous hotel, get you ground transportation, and VIP tickets to Ben Platt.
I can't imagine my life.
To win, all you gotta do is go to wearechannelq.com. Thanks to AEG.
Yep, make sure you enter your chance to win. WeAreChannelQ.com.
Okay, coming up on the show, what role does willpower really play in avoiding temptation? We're talking about that in 30 minutes.
Ooh, willpower.
Yeah. Hopefully we talk about the religious trauma that comes with that sometimes.
Hey, willpower. Ooh, that's going to be a sexy conversation.
Plus the future
mine is pretty strong.
Of a top comic book series involving a star who keeps getting arrested. More in the tea report.
I'm so sick of. Oh my God, yeah. I'm so sick of this star. But you all will see in the tea report.
Yep. Let's get into some what's trending this hour headlines. Representative Barbara Lee says she's outraged that Republicans blocked a $35 cap on insulin prices for non-medical people in the Inflation Reduction Act.
But let me be clear. This bill is not perfect. And I am outraged by Republican senators' opposition to key provisions like a $35 cap on insulin prices. You know who that affects disproportionately, black and brown people. They're putting politics over people. Families still face huge burdens from housing to childcare to immigration. We have a lot left to get done. But thanks to the relentless, and I mean relentless, determination of the Progressive Caucus and progressives around the country, we are poised to deliver real, tangible improvements in the lives of families around the country immediately.
Yep. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer said, quote, we're going to come back and make them vote on that again. So that's definitely still top of mind. Moving on to the New York Times, he refused to run an op-ed from Republican South Carolina Senator Tim Scott in 2020 without Democratic Senate leader Chuck Schumer's approval. Scott reportedly submitted an op-ed promoting police reform legislation that he introduced in June 2020, but New York Times leadership buried it. Wow.
Hmm.
All right. What do you think about that, church and state, you know, with a publisher?
Child, the church is the state, the direction we're headed
well,
in.
Well, but meaning like for the New York Times to say they're not going to allow an op-ed from
well,
a certain side.
Well, I mean, they're a private-owned company, aren't they? They pick and choose. Just like, do you think the Federalist would allow, you think Breitbart would allow an op-ed from me? Doubt
and
it.
Let's not, like, they do run, they have Republican opinionists.
Oh, plenty.
They have so many.
They're dangerous
so it's
sometimes.
Like, let's not act like they don't. And so, like, if they...
That's a good point.
If they decide not to do this specific one, that must mean it was doing some things that even for them was a
that
bit much.
That the editor-in-chief didn't want to stand by.
So it's
we'll
kind of
like, we'll see how they respond to that. And finally, a debate is raging online after the Shakespeare's Globe Theater in London announced an upcoming play about Joan of Arc would feature a non-binary person in the lead role who uses the pronouns they, them. Of course, J.K. Rowling has something to say about it, saying the switch was, quote, insulting and damaging. Feminists today denounce new non-binary portrayal as offensive and sexist. But the theater had defended production and suggested Shakespeare would agree.
J.K. Rowling don't speak for feminists.
I know. Why is this becoming, it's unfortunate this is becoming like her brand where she just like talks
out
about
it. Is.
Yeah, she's a spokesperson for TERFs.
Yeah.
But the gag is you saw Matt Walsh and the other people like actively silencing her. She thinks she has support. That speaks to a lot of women who think that they can just enter the boys club with no repercussions.
53%.
Like, sister, that you gonna be in for the shock of your life. You think it's sweet now.
Well, that was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news?
Oh, my goodness. If you all have been listening to Channel Q every day this summer, like I know that you have, then you know how much Char is annoyed with this next person. And no, it's not Demi Lovato. It's actually Ezra Miller. I don't know if you all, because I wasn't here this week, did you all talk about how Warner Brothers still had Ezra filming scenes this summer?
I don't remember. I feel like at this point, all of our Ezra Miller content just blurs together.
It's just so wild to me that Ezra
that
was out here committing all these offenses and then was like, oh, I'll just be in Tuesday to do that pickup scene for The Flash.
And it seems like Ezra is in a space where clearly they're having mental health issues. So how do they hop back into being able to perform as a, like in a role like
how
that?
How do you scrap Batgirl and then still fully...
Well, yeah, why aren't they doing anything?
Exactly.
Well, Warner Brothers is reportedly debating how to move forward with The Flash.
What's the debate?
The debate is happening because now all of this
is
public knowledge.
Yeah.
We know that you all allowed Ezra to fly in on Tuesdays and Thursdays and film in the midst of him assaulting women in Hawaii.
Why do they love him? Just get another actor.
But I will say it's annoying because I really am excited. I really wanted that Flash movie.
But just do Flash
and
without
another
actor.
And they were a good
actor.
Flash too. It's just annoying that they've ruined it.
According to The Hollywood Reporter, a source said the studio is considering three possible options regarding the release of the DC movie, which is currently set for June 2023, so just under a year, including one instance where the film is pulled all together. I say yank it just like they did Batgirl.
Yeah, you might as well.
And the Scooby-Doo and use it as a tax write-off. But per the insider, the first scenario would include Miller reaching out out for professional help, which WB Warner Brothers has heard inklings could happen. Ooh, it's a possibility. They then could do an interview in which they'd address the controversial behavior. This is a whole PR thing. It's about rebranding. Ezra, if the studio were to go forward with the second strategy, the movie could still open in theaters, but Miller wouldn't be very much involved in the promotion of the film. So they'd still be able to be the star. You just can't Live with Kelly and Ryan and promote it. So, you know, I don't know what to say about Warner Brothers. I don't know how I feel about these institutions because it's so blatant. Like, you all can't lie to us. We see who you're choosing to discard and who you're choosing. You're working overtime to protect. And it's frustrating because Ezra, as we've seen in the myriad of reports that have unfolded this summer, is clearly, mental health or not, abusing people and minors.
Don't give him a leading role.
Like, don't give him a role at all. Put him in a corner for timeout like you did everyone else and let him sit out for 3 years. That's the T report for this hour.
Yeah. Well, next up, this is like therapy hour. I love it. How to define success on your own terms. Next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
So how do you define success? And we want to get into how to define success on your own terms. But, you know, I guess first it is important to know what success means to you in order to define, you know, how you get that.
That's such a great question.
Yeah, so I'm going to throw it out to everyone here. What does success mean to you?
I feel like success for me has changed over time. I think when I first moved out here, success was all about, it was really being fueled to prove everyone wrong back at home, especially my mom. It was about reaching a level of quote unquote success, about like, you know, oh, I can pay my own bills. I made it. Everything you were saying, I guess what? I succeeded. I did it. It was literally being fueled off of all the negativity in the gag, literally. And I think now how I view success is being happy and proud with the work that I'm putting out, intentional with the work that I put out. And then, like, also, this is a new thing, also realizing that not everything is needs to be surrounded by money. Like, it doesn't necessarily, like, you don't have to be money-centric to be, like, feeling like, oh, you did something really great here. And that's really shifted for me.
You definitely took part of my answer, because a lot of success for me was, of course, rooted in financial trauma that came with adulthood, which is so odd, because in childhood, I didn't struggle financially. Like, I was taken care of, had a great childhood and adolescence. But, you know, once you get kicked out of the nest, you realize, like, oh, my parents made it seem like this was nothing, and adulting is something, okay? And so for me, much like Ryan, my definition has changed, and I can say right now, as a girl in her mid-30s, success for me looks like balance, where I've realized that I'm looking for something outside of work to rest in. Because there was one point in my life where I was like, if I were to die today, I have nothing to show for but work. So it's about balance and trying to really craft in and be present in my life when I'm not in front of a microphone or a laptop. That really means a lot to me right now. But also, you know, still staying visible and still working.
It's a part of it. It's part of the process.
I do not subscribe to the rat race of it. Like, it's one of those things that I always say, what's for me will always find me, but I know that I still have to work towards that. But I am not about to overexert myself or, you know, outdo myself to try to get to certain places. I just don't have it in me right now. And yeah, that's what success looks like for me. I cannot just lay my life on the coals, so to speak, and then let Hollywood swallow me up. I got to keep something for myself.
Sure, I feel like you've been 15, 20 years in the game?
Yeah, since 2004.
Like,
that's
a long...
in high school.
That's a long time. So how...
It's a long time to be hustling. That's what I tell you, I'm tired.
How has success changed for you?
That's when Destiny's Child came out with Destiny Fulfilled.
It sure was a great time.
Lose My Breath was 2004. Go ahead.
Having my timeline, you know, connects to Destiny's Child. I think that there's definitely been different moments of understanding what success means to me. Like, I've had different thinking around that, just like each of you, and like even a shorter period of time, similar. You know, definitely there were these milestones I wanted to hit, whether it be like, okay, I need to get on a show or be on the red carpet and do this award show. There were like these professional moments that I felt like I wanted to fulfill. And then it's kind of like those moments hit and you're like, still not fulfilled.
Talk about it.
And then you're like, what else? And then you realize, like, you can get it, you cannot get it, and yet you're still unsatisfied. So then that kind of, for me, at a certain point, made me start like looking at, okay, why am I feeling constantly unsatisfied?
Because the barometer is constantly moving.
Exactly, because I was always looking also at everything I was accomplishing outside of myself. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, did I have really a sense of who I was, right? Did I know my worth outside of getting that validation? Ooh. And success, or quote-unquote, you know, external success.
Oh, my gosh, Shira, and that is so, because I don't know if we talked about it, but, like, the Monday after my birthday, I literally woke up with so much anxiety, because I think after birthdays and things like that, it really brings up, like, it brought up for me this anxiety of being like, well, what's next? What's happening next? Yeah. What do you need to accomplish next? And it was really something that messed with me for a little bit, because I literally was coming off something that was really beautiful and, like, that felt really great. And I always forget about that kind of like high that you get when you are coming off of a level of visibility that you're like, oh, wow, everyone's seeing some praising the work you're doing. Yeah, yeah. And then there's that come down.
Trust me. And
that
I still go
down
through that.
Hard.
I think staying cognizant of that is what's going to keep you afloat, because it goes also within like not putting all of your eggs in one basket. That's why balance is big for me. Like I can acknowledge this big opportunity, but also a big opportunity is having dinner with friends. Like, I can balance out like that.
Yeah.
But also, there was a Char Says So I did weeks ago that talked about something like this, where statistically, Olympians who get the gold medal are more depressed than people who get the silver and bronze, because you work so hard for this gold. You work so hard for this goal and the gold.
You're like looking at it.
You get
like...
it. It's around your neck. The ceremony's over. The lights are down. And now it's time to go to bed. And they plunge into a depression because they've done months of training and all these swimming laps and cardio.
Your
and
it's like,
or they
was
say
that.
The middle.
Your
actually, the
now
silver.
That you got it.
They say the silver because you didn't get the gold. But then, like, if you just got the bronze, you're like, thank God I got in the top three. But if you're the silver, you're like, I could have gotten the gold.
The gold is, I did a Char Says So on this. The gold, studies show that people who got gold medals
it's
were
so
depressed, were more depressed than the
so,
others.
Yeah. And listen, I still have definitely moments like, trust me, I'm a doer. Like, I do a lot. I try to accomplish a lot. I have my goals.
Your career over the time has been beautiful
but
to see.
And I always, you could say, reinvent. So there is still a lot of, you know, people will still be like, you're still doing a lot. You still are always, like, focused on doing a lot. But I must say, yeah, it's more that I have a sense of a wholeness, like, holistic view of my life that I didn't have when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
where I have other things I'm looking to accomplish and be.
Does that come with age?
Yeah.
I think so.
And an understanding of who I was. And like, also now I approach what I do differently. There needs to be some flexibility. Like, I want a bit more time. I don't need to rush everything. That's success to me now. Mm. And like having time with the people I love mm-hmm. and having, being able to choose, because I could hustle and I could work on that deadline. But then on the other side of it, like, it's not one or the other. I think as you get older, success is it, not saying having it all, but being able to choose how you want to do those
things. Success shouldn't be only looked at through a professional lens.
No, and reason I was going to piggyback off what Shira said is when you realize like the area, the field of work that we're in is not linear.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not like our friends who work in accounting
where they can go in to be the director.
Because I've seen examples with my own two eyes of people who are on air, who have a show on a Friday and then get a call from the boss Monday morning saying that you don't need to come in because it's over.
Yeah.
So when you realize that people can be up on Monday and Tuesday and down on Thursday and Friday, I skipped over Wednesday, don't know why, but maybe that's the transitional phase, but down on Thursday and Friday, you really sit in those moments and embrace and really define success for you, for yourself. And even the people who do appear to constantly be on top, I believe a lot of that is performance and facade, because they know.
Yeah.
There's no way that you reach that level and you're not keenly aware and zoomed in on that this has a time limit on it.
Yep.
Oprah knew it. When you get that talk show.
Which is also goes back to really what's your why and what's your purpose, and things will come and go around that. But that is your foundation. Right.
That's why you got to make sure, like Ryan said, being intentional with the projects that you take on and making sure that you are getting some sort of fulfillment outside of financially from the projects that you take on. Because this stuff is fleeting. And we always see conversations about don't give your all to your job because, you know, you die on a Wednesday, you replaced on Monday. And they didn't, you know.
And I think that's also, and we can take this over to the next segment. Or, you know, we can have a conversation.
We can do how do you define failure.
Yeah, actually, that's really interesting. I have tons more to talk about.
I have more about failure.
Okay, well, then
I'll tell you about my biggest fail.
All right, up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
So we've been talking about how you define success, what it means to you, but then how also do you define failure, or attach yourself to the failures of your life to make it into your life story, right? Because that could stop you from really seeing the success that you're having, because you might not even think you're worthy of having it because of everything.
I mean, listen, Hollywood's the town that'll reaffirm your unworthiness if you let it.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing. I think my failures for me have, I've had them professionally, but I think the biggest failure for me has happened personally. And it was one of those things that shaped the kind of financial PTSD that I always experienced. Like, when I first moved out here, I thought I kind of knew everything that I knew about adulting, paying bills, all these things.
You did for Nashville standards.
Literally for Nashville standards. But when I got out here, it was really, really difficult. I felt like I was kind of like, I didn't know what I was doing, and I couldn't call home because I didn't want to be proven wrong and all these things. And I remember I was headed to work one morning, like walking down the stairs.
Yeah.
And my car wasn't there. And my car ended up being repoed. And I remember,
oh my God,
it was like, I was like 30 minutes. I had to get to work. And it was the first job that I had gotten. I had a panic attack because I was like, oh my God, I finally got an actual job. And I was about to start paying bills again.
Yeah.
And I literally walked down there and I was like, how am I supposed to get to work now? How am I supposed to do this?
Yeah.
And literally, it was one of those moments where I felt like, maybe this is a sign that I need to, like, actually just listen to what my mom said and pack it up and go home. And I remember, because I was also doing, like, you know, I think there was a time period when I first moved out here where everyone was trying to do YouTube and stuff. And there's a video that I have on, like, an old laptop of, like, me kind of, like, was, like, vlogging, like, life and stuff.
Amazing.
And there's a video that I have, but I haven't watched it ever, like, again, because I was literally, like, in a place that was, like, I wouldn't recognize myself, because it was a state of like just failure on my end, and I was really being mean to myself in a way that I'd never experienced. And so, like, for me, like, that moment seriously changed, because I literally was able to pay off that car like maybe like a month ago. I was able, because I was still still paying on my car, and then my car note, because I had it sold when the car got repossessed. It sold at an auction.
Yeah.
But I still had a huge amount that I had to pay.
Really?
And I was able
just cancel me out. If you're going to take it.
Yeah, I was able to like finally pay it off.
That's
and like
wild.
That was a moment where like.
At least your videos are on an old laptop. Mine are still up on YouTube for the entire world. If you want to go look at a 25-year-old Char.
Me too.
Do some dig.
Me too.
I don't know if I'll ever. Like,
you can hear my I had like a chipmunk voice.
Me too.
Isn't that interesting?
I mean,
and then it gets lower.
Yours is probably 10 times more chipmunky than me. But for me, failure, I don't really, and I think it's interesting that you mentioned success on a professional level, but failure on a personal level. That's interesting. Because for me, failure is on the professional side as well. There are times that I've gotten into my head, or I think now it's been. And now that I've been able to shift gaze and realize that failure is subjective, and it's also with how you deal with it and how you recover, that I've been able to really kind of leverage things off. I've been fired one time and twice in LA. And firings, I don't know if it's just the Capricorn in me, but being fired crumbles me.
Oh, yeah.
It just, ugh. And I even hate the word, like, you know, just say terminated.
Well,
like,
it's literally you. I mean, it's failure.
Yeah.
Being fired is failure.
So I've been fired, and I try to roll with it. I find empowerment in other, you know, spicy women behind the mic who've been fired, like a Joy Behar or a Wendy Williams.
Yeah.
You know, even though Wendy was only unemployed, fun fact, for 2 weeks. She had a 30-year radio career, and she was only unemployed for 2 weeks in the entire 30-year span
of her
radio career.
There's so many reasons why you could be fired. One, it could be you messed up. But then there's
budget
also
cuts.
But like also the internal politics, someone doesn't like you. It's like there's so much stuff that you can't control.
It's one thing that I grapple with now as a 34-year-old who's about to be 35 in like 5 months. You all know I don't run from my age. But like I've never had a salaried position ever in my entire life. I have the formal education. I have the experience.
I didn't until I was here.
I have never had a contract extended. I got the professional record and resume and reputation to support the campaign, but no one's ever been like, sweetie, sign this contract. We don't want to lose you. And so that's something that I've been having to grapple with, but I also have appreciated my flexibility because I'm able to try new fun things.
Totally.
Sometimes there's more money what I would have made in one area in a month, I'm getting it in 2 hours.
Exactly.
Here in this.
Yeah.
So I've like I said, I've been able to reframe and restructure some of my ideas around failure, because for a long time that really did bother me. When I look to my left and my right and my contemporaries are inking contracts left and right, I'm like, what the hell is it about me? Mm. When I have these things on paper and in person that say otherwise, and I have people in my ear that say otherwise. And so the fact that I don't have a contract does not match or align with any of the feedback that I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
And so that used, like I said, that used to really bother me, not so much anymore. Because I know, you know, it'll come in due time. And when it comes, I'm clinging to the belief that it'll be the contract to knock my socks off.
Exactly.
Like, oh, you've been waiting all this time, and now shut up. I feel like I'll be like, here, damn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
instead of what, you just getting a contract that you for a job you
just
hate.
To say that I, well, not even necessarily that I hate, but just to kind of satisfy that ego, you know, satisfy my ego and say that, oh, I have a contract. I think that it'll be a contract that I've, that'll make sense in the book.
Exactly. It always makes sense in hindsight, right?
Yes, yes.
It
does
make sense sometimes. So if you can kind of like feel into that, because a lot of times if you think about life, you always say, oh, that made sense. Well, just think about as things are happening, literally tell yourself, like, it will make sense. And you just have to trust. But yet,
it's sometimes hard to cling to that.
Still feel it. Still feel what it feels.
Because I ain't got a man either.
Yeah. Okay. One thing at a time, Char. One thing at a time.
Y'all will fix my life.
It's the baby steps for me.
How do you define failure?
You just Google Shira fired and you see my file.
Do we have time for Shira?
We have a little time.
No.
We can do
it's
it.
Fine. No, odd is that
we laid
I've
ours
had,
out. You laid yours
I've
out.
I've had a picture of everything too. Listen, failed relationships, ones that I self-sabotaged, or it wasn't the right thing, but yet I made it. I tried to make it work because.
Yeah.
I loved being, you know, in a relationship because I was obviously had fear of being alone, and I wanted that male attention and validation.
Mm.
And then similarly, it's like I've had, quote unquote, from many people's perception, in a very illustrious career. A lot of people looked up to my career.
No, seriously.
But yet, in my mind,
quite the resume.
It still felt like I didn't, you know, at different points, like I wasn't getting what I wanted or what I envisioned, which goes back to sometimes it is about getting specific, but sometimes it's about feeling into, like, you know, what's your purpose? What's your why? What do you, how do you want to feel? Where do you want to be? And that might show up in different ways than you thought.
Yeah.
And so I know, like,
and it's okay to still figure that out.
And it's okay to still figure that out. Right. Exactly. And then you might look back and say, maybe I don't really want that anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
We're constantly changing and evolving as human beings. And that's part of the beauty and also part of the scariness of this lived experience.
Yeah.
Because who I am at 34 is not remotely close to who I was at 24, aside from some of my interests still aligning.
So
but
here's the thing.
Different person.
And all my quote unquote fails have become, you know, great stories. No, you know, it's like no one necessarily always just wants to listen to the success story. They want to hear.
Well, that's you being disingenuous. Everybody has successes.
Well, yeah,
failures.
But everyone, but like people want to hear about, like, but when you were on the floor,
because that's what's relatable.
How did you get out of that?
That's what's relatable,
right? But that also is what creates grit. That's what creates resilience. That, you know, it makes you actually who you are.
I want a soft life.
Mm-mm. But then you go to the other side of that after you come out of that and you say, I'm appreciative. I'm happy. I get all these lessons. I'm a different / better person. And yet now I welcome ease and flow. It doesn't
That's
need
all
to be
I
hard.
Want.
Yeah, if those hard traumas haven't made you resent everything.
Exactly. And that's the other challenge. That's the other beautiful thing to get through and learn. Because then you're not going to get what you want and if you're coming from a place of resentment and anger. Frustration.
This might be one
That's
of my favorite conversations we've
therapy.
Had today. This was great.
Anyway, well, let us know what you thought. LGT shows where you can find us on social media. Next up, how old is too old to kiss your parents on the lips? After this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, how old is too old to kiss your parents on the lips? This is a question that keeps coming up.
Three.
Yeah, it came up, you know, with celebrities like Hilary Duff, David Beckham, Gabrielle Union, Tom Brady. There was videos or pictures of them, you know, kissing their kids on the lips. And I think that it's also a cultural thing. I think that there's some certain cultures where people are just kissing on lips and it's just to show admiration.
Yeah, we hypersexualize everything as Americans because, you know, overseas they show breasts on TV. We would never get away with that. Yeah. You know, like on your Channel 7 on Scandalous.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting. When I was in Israel and we were at a resort by the Dead Sea, mm-hmm. I mean, there was like baby and like people were like kind of like just nude, adults and babies.
One of my friends went to a coast in France and she was saying that men have to wear Speedos. You don't wear swim trunks and all of the kids were nude.
Yeah, all the kids are
like if you're
nude.
Like 7-8 years old. Yeah.
Okay, well, according to a doctor, we're going to tell you what a doctor has to say. Before we do that, this whole conversation reminded us of a little stand-up special that Nikki Glaser did recently.
Ooh, on HBO Max, if you all can sit through it, because I didn't last, but take a listen.
Only because I kissed my dad on the lips till I was like 24, and it was just a thing we did in my family, you know, like deny alcoholism. Like we just act like everything's fine. And I remember the day I put an end to it. I had just been like smooching all day long with my boyfriend, not to brag or whatever, but I was just like really going hard with a guy. And I went to go meet my parents for dinner and I greeted my dad and just like we went in and I kissed him on the lips and it's the wires just got crossed. Like I lingered a second too long and it was just, ugh, and I stopped immediately. Like I let go of his lip, I was biting it, but I was like, Dad, I can't kiss you anymore.
Woo, right.
What a mess.
So gross. What a mess.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I just don't know if that, if I'm being honest, you know, I feel like I'm often the one that does it, but like, I just don't know if black people be kissing on the lips like that. Like black families.
No.
Like,
regardless
that would be weird.
Of culture, when I think Caribbean, when I think African,
It's not a thing.
We also don't kiss our pets in the mouth, though.
Oh,
so.
Well, that's not true.
I've kissed my dog's nose.
Yeah, I'll kiss Coco's nose. I let Coco's kiss me.
But I'm not having a makeout session with my dog.
Not even,
so you can give
let her kiss me. Her breast stinks. Though.
So you can give me pimples.
When I had COVID and I didn't have my smell, it was kind of the best time for her to give me
Coco's
all the kisses.
Coco's breath is on 10. It's very beefy.
It's so bad. It's like I've been trying to work on it, but it's a dog. She's a dog.
I know.
It's her gut.
She's actually a throw pillow.
So, it's so funny because I don't, obviously, I'm in Montreal, kiss, double kiss, we kiss.
Cultural.
But then sometimes once in a blue moon by mistake, like you're like, oh, bye. And then you're like I've gotten close by mistake and like me and my dad are like,
mm-hmm. Well, I know you. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you talked about like y'all used to take showers and stuff together, right? When you were babies.
When I was a baby.
Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification.
When you're a baby. No, I'm sorry. Yeah.
My parents divorced.
Now, what type of show y'all got me on?
When I was three, my parents got divorced, and so my dad was a single dad. So like when he was with me, and I needed to take a shower, how else? Or like so we would go and shower together, and then it happened once, and then there was like
a tugging.
Wait, why didn't he just bathe you?
Yeah, she tugged on something she wasn't supposed to tug
on. I don't know because I think he was living at my aunt's basement at the time, and there wasn't a bath.
And also, I feel like it makes sense for a dad to be like, all right, let's consolidate this.
Exactly.
Let's just get this over with.
But see, even culturally, I don't see, I see moms doing that.
That's true.
I don't.
Well, you don't know if like, if a single dad is doing, so you don't know that, but maybe.
But see, the way I've been socialized, I would think something nefarious.
At
God
any
forgive
rate,
me.
At any, well, yeah.
I would. Yeah. Sorry.
At any rate, here, what a doctor, a behavior analyst, Dr. Reena B. Patel on Refinery 29 says she doesn't recommend parents kiss their kids on the lips at any age because it becomes a blurred line. She said,
like Nikki just
yes,
said.
It's cute when they're little, but then how do we create and teach personal boundaries and personal space? Where do they draw the line? It's not an easy thing to teach. If we're doing it because of love and affection or showing that we care about someone, who are we to tell a child that you can't care about one person versus
that's
the other?
That's how I feel about when celebrities.
Area.
What's the girl from Clueless when she was talking about her son?
Oh, Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah, her son still sleeps in the bed with her. Yeah. I'm like, girl, you need to quit that.
That's a storyline in Uncoupled.
It's like,
if you keep watching.
Oh, is it?
On Netflix, Neil Patrick Harris and Tisha Campbell. But that goes along the same lines as that as far as like, I remember I could sleep in my parents' bed. Like I would try to sneak in there if I had a nightmare. But when I would like creep in, it's so funny because my mom did create the illusion that I was moving her over, but she was still asleep. She knew it was me and would slide over.
Yeah.
I never felt compelled to hop in the middle. I just wanted to be by my mom.
Aww.
Which I don't know what that says about our family dynamics. But
it's true. There's something about moms. Like I feel like moms kissing their kids on the lips is different. for some reason.
Well, yeah, but in my family, we never kissed on the lips. Well, I can think about my mom saying, like, jokingly, like, girl, you got too much lip gloss on. And, like, you know, like, giving a little peck to take some lip gloss off. But, yeah, I think.
What about your grandparents? Like, I think I most kiss my grandparents on the lips. Like,
no, I never did that. My granny just kisses me on my forehead.
Yeah, it's more endearing. But what
my
I will say
kisses
is.
Kisses me on my forehead, too.
To answer, forehead kisses are dangerous when we get to the romantical era. But because I think about how I'm triggered by someone who was playing games with me who gave me forehead kisses.
Oh.
But what I will say is, I think as far as me and my household, now I don't have children. I don't even have a man. I don't even have a dog. I don't even have Coco. 3 years old maximum.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's
and
for
if
me.
They realize that, you know, I guess certain
things. Well, you don't make it a bad thing.
No,
you just,
of course.
It stops. And that's even if it starts, honestly. I don't see a need to.
I think they're still too young. I think like 5, 6. I feel like once they start getting into like from kid into like puberty.
If
you're a kid still, you can do it.
Kids be putting their mouth on all different, and so do adults.
And I feel like at 5 you're allowed to talk. I don't know.
Right.
I just don't know what that
There's
means.
Also kids with backwash. You know, they don't fully chew their food.
No. But it's your kid.
Sure.
I think you
I
let your kid do anything.
I draw the line.
We'll see this in 10, 20 years.
What I will say is the older that they get, the more difficult it becomes to explain why we have to stop this behavior.
Oh, yeah. So
when they're younger, you can do it and not have any shame. When they're 14, telling them, we can't kiss on the lips anymore.
I think any double digit. All right, double digit. Okay.
Even when they're 8, they're 9.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.